So this morning, looks like we're going to finish the chapter, reading text 43, 44, and 45 from chapter 17. Previously we read where Maharaj Pichit gave suitable place for Kali, where irreligious principles are taking place. And since there weren't any irreligious principles taking place in Maharaj Pichit's kingdom, it wasn't so generous. As Prabhupada writes, he tricked him. He cheated him, says. But in this age of Kali, where gold is hoarded, then these irreligious principles will take place. So Prabhupada spoke much about gold standard and how to encourage austerity. Then he restored the three legs of the bull. And the warning is given that those who are interested in the progressive well-being of society must carefully avoid the above aforementioned irreligious principles. So the two remaining verses, the glorifications of Maharaj Pichit. First one saying how he, as a descendant of the Pandavas, followed the standard of his previous ancestors, his grandparents, and the previous line. And how his reign as king was expert. That ends the chapter. Text 43-44 reads, "The most fortunate Emperor Pichit was entrusted with the kingdom of Hastinapur by Maharaj Yudhisthira when he desired to retire to the forest, is now ruling the world with great success due to his being glorified by the deeds of the kings of the Kuru dynasty." In the purport, Prabhupada speaks about why our acharyas apparently have commented why this is all in the present tense, although it's something that happened long ago. And he explains present tense is used because it's contemporary, it's closest. According to some authorities, the present tense is used to indicate the nearest margin of time from the past. In that sense, the present tense is applied to the reign of Maharaj Pichit here. For continuous fact, also, present tense can be used. In other words, what Maharaj Pichit did can be done today. It's the principle of each of the things that he did. He acted strongly when he heard of irreligion. He came personally to check it. He gave a fair trial. And the decisiveness that he exhibited was after Kali surrendered, he gave him suitable place. So in the purport, Prabhupada, there's two sections where he says how irreligion can be purged from society. It's not happening. It's going the other way. But from the position of a qualified king, here's what Prabhupada writes. We can still purge out from the state all the activities of immorality introduced by the personality of Kali if we are determined to take action like Maharaj Parikshit. Oh, two things. He allotted some space for Kali. But in fact, Kali could not find such places in the world at all, because Maharaj Parikshit was strictly vigilant to see that there were no places for gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter. But that's the formula that Prabhupada is giving. Being the foolish administrators today, they just give licenses and take taxes for those things. For a gambling house, for drinking establishments, for meat eating establishments, they give licenses and they take taxes. And they wonder why we have so many problems. He's saying the solution is you don't have those. You just don't allow it. Of course they're not, who's going to follow that? They're not going to follow that. It's the influence of Kali. But a proper king could check it. He writes, modern administrators want to banish corruption from the state, but fools as they are, they do not know how to do it. They want to issue licenses. And as a result, falsity in every dealing, even their own, is abundant. And they want at the same time to drive out corruption from the state. They want the kingdom of God without God consciousness. How can it be possible to adjust two contradictory matters? They want to drive out corruption from the state. We must first organize society to accept the principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, and to make the condition favorable, we must close all places of gambling, drinking, prostitution, and falsity. Finished. Two steps. Religious principles, everyone should follow. Second, these are according to religious principles, closed. So they don't do that, and so they have not just those things, but the byproduct of those things is so much corruption, so much crime, so much bribery, and so on and so on and so on. And all levels of human dealings, including the levels of government. They won't do that. So they're not going to get rid of the corruption. Lesson in whatever you call it, political sociology or something like that. Standing on, resting upon religious principles. Text 45. Maharaj Parikshit, son of Abhimanyu, is so experienced that by dint of his expert administration and patronage, it has been possible for you to perform a sacrifice such as this. So, this is Suta Goswami speaking to the sages who had assembled in Naimisharanya to perform a sacrifice. And they're being told by Suta that because Maharaj Parikshit was so expert for that reason today you're assembled peacefully doing this sacrifice, meaning minus qualified king like Maharaj Parikshit, that's not going to happen. And it doesn't happen. In the purport, Prabhupada discusses the position of the brahmanas and the kshatriyas. The brahmanas are expert, supposed to be expert, in assisting the spiritual elevation of society. The kshatriyas are supposed to be expert in taking care of the material peace and prosperity of human society. And so when the two are working well together and are active, then we have a good situation. So again, sometimes Prabhupada has emphasized in the preceding portions the Brahminical principle, sometimes the Kshatriya principle, but they're actually meant to be working well together. There's a very nice section in the third canto of the Bhagavatam that emphasizes the same point. It's where Swayambhuva Manu is visiting Kardava Muni. The reason for visiting Kardava Muni is that his daughter, Devahuti, has expressed to her father that she would like to marry Kardava Muni. And so the emperor goes deep into the forest to find Kardava Muni. And when he finds Kardava Muni, immediately the brahmana, Kardava Muni, receives the king as Vedic culture, a person would receive a guest. He receives him with great honor and speaks words of praise and glorification and appreciation, and basically gives him a blank check and says, you've come here, I don't know why you've come here. You've come here for some purpose, and whatever that purpose is, the answer is yes. Now, what is it that you come here for? And after being received so nicely, Swayambhuva Manu speaks the same way of Kardava Muni. You're from the Brahman order, you're honoring me as your superior, but you're my superior, and speaks ways in which it's understood how deep was his regard and appreciation for Kardava Muni. And then Prabhupada's comment is, when this relationship exists between those who are administrative in nature and those who are brahminical in nature, the phrase is used, brahma-karya, then we have a very nice situation. It's like in our ISKCON context, if we have someone who's a very dynamic creature, they're able to attract people to participate in Krishna consciousness. Very nice. And then what happens once they're attracted to Krishna consciousness? There has to be an administrator that can organize things very nicely so that the requirements of those persons are met and things are peaceful and everything is taken care of. So a qualified preacher needs a qualified administrator. A qualified administrator, what's a qualified administrator without something to administrate over, to bring the resources that preaching is required? People, whatever it is. So both are required, and when they're both properly situated and cooperating very nicely, the main component of this cooperation is respect. If they respect, then cooperation is going to be there. And if there isn't respect, then it's Kali. Just quarrel. Constant quarrel. Constant quarrel. So this is ideal. And that's what Prabhupada is writing in the purport. Maharaj Parikshit was experienced enough to drive away Kali from the field of activities and thereby make the state receptive for spiritual enlightenment. That's how this, practically how it's working here. So that the brahmanas could do their brahmana duty, the brahminical function of spiritual enlightenment, Maharaj Parikshit is performing his role, removing irreligiosity, personified, so that brahmanas can perform their proper activity, just as he previously said. O friend of irreligion, Parikshit speaking to Kali, you do not deserve to remain in a place where experts perform sacrifices according to truth and religious principles for the satisfaction of the personality and Godhead. So, for the sake of the brahmanas, this is part of protecting brahminical culture. The administrative component or personalities within society must remove irreligion. The brahmanas are to uphold religion, the kshatriyas are to eliminate it, irreligion, curb its influence. Just as Krishna does, so they're agents of Krishna. They derive their capacity, their strength from Krishna. Now what happens if people are already polluted by the age of Kali? If common people are not receptive, it is very difficult to impress upon them the necessity of spiritual enlightenment. That's the condition. So now, how to assist making them more receptive for spiritual enlightenment? Austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, basic principles of religion. Prepare the ground for reception of advancement in spiritual knowledge. And Maharaj Parikshit made this favorable condition possible. So Prabhupada, as a world preacher, was calling upon the leaders of society to make this arrangement. That these principles of religion, doesn't matter this religion, that religion, just the principles of religion should be upheld. It's the administrative function. That's what he was saying. Just as he's saying here, as the Bhagavatam is indicated. And they would say, Swamiji, we can't do that. That we would have secular government, separation of church and state. Basically, Prabhupada would say, you're nonsense. Because that is an administrative function. It's not a brahmana's function. It's not a sannyasi's function. To see that people, you know, to create that system whereby, just like education, in schools, you have secular schools, and so you can't teach about God. So what's the result? You have a godless society. You have a godless society, what's the result? It's a haven. It's a playground for Kali. And he goes wild. So the best they can do in education is they call it character education, where, you know, they're supposed to teach children in school religious principles without calling them religious principles. With God just disappears from the landscape. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. They try, it doesn't work. The more indirect you get, the less it works. The more direct you get, it becomes possible for it to work. It's principles. They're God-given principles. They're supported by that connection with God. So the administrator set the standards for public education in our modern system. Because taxpayers pay, and with the tax money, then they establish schools. So the administrative, the theme is, the administrative component in society must, administrative component in society must ensure an atmosphere where religious principles can be performed. Then the spiritual enlightenment, service of the brahmanas can be effective. Prabhupada is using this language about receptivity. So there's receptivity. When there's receptivity in the population, the brahmanas can do their work. So you have to separate this irreligion. And you accommodate irreligion, and you're not going to have receptivity. The brahmanas can't do their work. Society starts to go down. And as it goes down, it becomes difficult to rescue it. And it goes further down. And it goes further down and further down, and that's Kali Yuga. It goes bottomless practically. It just keeps going down. How to make it different? Formula's here. There should be complete cooperation between the brahmanas and kshatriyas for this common good. Even up to Maharaj Ashok, the same spirit was prevailing. Lord Buddha was sufficiently supported by King Ashok, and thus his particular cult of knowledge was spread all over the world. So he's at the end of the purport, it's the end of the chapter. Prabhupada is referring to that as an example of how the administrators, when they understand what their duty is properly, not just to have faith, but it's a duty to their citizens, then the brahmanas can be effective. And that's how it can change. We need very qualified brahmanas, we need very qualified kshatriyas. The whole situation can change. And take that broader example into the smaller example, a micro example, our devotee communities, like this community. Both components need to be strong. The component of spiritual strength, spiritual enlightenment, spiritual wisdom needs to be strong. The teaching and the example need to be clear and strong. And the administration, so that those who are cultivating spiritual enlightenment can do so in a peaceful state. Irreligion must be kept out. Now, it doesn't mean we just are throwing people, you know, get out of here. But the exhibition of irreligion needs to be strongly and immediately dealt with. for the sake of protection. Of innocent and sincere persons. Okay. Any discussion?
In today's context, for somebody to play the role of a Kshatriya, an administrative person, supporting the enlightened persons, he himself must have sufficient enlightenment to appreciate the qualification of the enlightened personality.
Sure.
And usually administrative position, it's difficult to find that kind of a qualification.
Yeah.
So how does it work in the day?
We don't have people of that qualification. They think they know. I'm sure each administrator has some persons who he goes to and confides in that he sees as, let's say, the religious minded souls in a leadership role. But you know, they themselves, that neither are of proper quality. Really, it takes the principles of Bhagavad Gita to be clearly understood. For example, we're not this body. Because otherwise it's cosmetic. At best, it's something that looks like the mode of goodness but really isn't mode of goodness because there's so much ignorance involved, thinking in terms of the body. So your question was, when the modern context, how does it work? And the answer is it doesn't. Something? You had your hand up?
Raja, similar question was that in present time.
Go ahead. At the present time.
We see that nobody has created qualities of Kshatriya Brahmana.
Right.
Some quality of Kshatriya, some Shudra, some next is a mixture. In such a case that well defined a person as a Brahmana role and a Kshatriya role, because we find that same person is doing different roles. So how would they make a. It was a similar question about Tuva.
Are we speaking about, is your question framed in terms of the governments of the world today? You're speaking more about our devotee communities. We've had this, one way to respond to this question is, we've had this discussion a lot in our GBC. And our function, the function of a GBC person, in Prabhupada's language, is the ultimate managerial authority. But how can one be the ultimate managerial authority unless one has some spiritual acumen? You can't. Now, who is that brahmana who an individual GBC member will go to? To as his ministers. So we've given thought to, had discussions about some system where there's ministers, or a brahminical sector and an administrative sector, spoken like that. What has come down to more is, Prabhupada did indicate that he wanted that, and so it's more the collective body serves as the brahminical, unto whom am I, brahminically responsible, accountable, rather. And then then there's this consideration that different individuals have different propensities. Some are more this, some are more that, some are more combination. And that's allowed. The main thing is the job gets done. The result of detachment combined with practical application. You know, detached knowledge and practical application. Wisdom and implementation of that wisdom. Brahminical function, the Kshatriya function. And different individuals have different ways of going about it. Some do, some work through others who do, and some combination. And that's allowed. Provided there's submissiveness and a willingness to receive the collective wisdom of others and be submissive to it. And there's practical implementation, whether one does it oneself or through others or combination. So that's not a strict in a strict sense of varnashram separation of functions. It's more a consideration of propensity of an individual. Perhaps in course of time, as things become more evolved, there can be that function. One example that comes to mind is Vasudev. Vasudev was in the administration of Kamsa. He was in administration before Kamsa, he was in administration of Uprasena. And Vasudev was a Kshatriya. But his propensity was more in advice. He was an advisor. He was considered very wise and would be consulted. It was on that strength that he was able to persuade Kamsa. He didn't fight Kamsa, he persuaded Kamsa because he was expert. He tried a few things that didn't work, and he came across one that worked. And there was respect for his wisdom. Otherwise, Kamsa would have just been in a rage and wouldn't have stopped. So, even in Vedic times, amongst Kshatriyas, there were those that had more this, some that had more that, one might imagine, somewhere in between, some combination. Krishna accepted Uddhava in that capacity. Very wise. Kshatriya. But he wasn't like, you know, out of the battlefield kind of Kshatriya. He was giving wisdom, but he was a Kshatriya. So with that kind of a model, propensity is propensity. And one recognizes propensity, and the main thing is you get the job done with proper wisdom. Guiding it. So whatever the nomenclature and so forth, it's a God-given system. Krishna created the system. We have guna and karma, and according to guna and karma, we have our nature, svabhava. And then we recognize Each person's nature has an appropriate function in carrying things out. And we respect the differences. because it brings the in the cooperative holistic look at what needs to happen. We need each part. There's a problem when you expect the part that doesn't match his nature to do something that doesn't match his nature, and he doesn't do it. During the reign of Maharaj Pichit, did people own some land and gold? I assume so. Or they just used whatever was needed for their service without proprietorship, understanding that the Lord only is the provider. Well, the system of land was there was a land holder, and that's the king. And then, you know, in other language, under terminology, zamindar and so on and so on. So they owned the land, and other people occupied the land. But I'm sure there was, even when they occupied the land and built a house on the land, there was some sense of proprietorship, although I don't know the details. There certainly was the sense that ultimately God is the proprietor of everything. The king is the representative of God, and therefore he is the proprietor on behalf of God. And then people would occupy that land, which is God's land, and under the proprietorship of the king, and it became like their land, but it wasn't their land, it was God's land. And so they would do agriculture, and some portion they would keep and some portion would go to the king as taxes. Nanda Maharaj, from time to time, periodically, he would go to Mathura and pay his taxes to the king. That was the system. So although he's the king of the cowherds, the land is Ugrasena's or Shurasena's. It's the king's. But he had his home and his bullock carts and his cows. So there was a sense of proprietorship. And with that which was his, a certain wealth. Although he gave in taxes. So there was a sense of proprietorship. But at the same time, ultimately understanding all of this belongs to God. They're not in a God-conscious condition. It's not contradictory. You know, you have your shoes, you have your shirt and pants, or your dhoti and kurta and sari and whatever it is. So that's yours. But in a deeper sense, Krishna conscious person understands whatever it is that I have, it's given by God. And in that ultimate sense, it's his property, and therefore I should take care of it, because it's his property. Not in the material sense that it's my property and God disappears. So some sense of proprietorship. But in a, as Prabhupada called it, a spiritual communistic sense. That is, ultimately, God is the proprietor and we're using it. But we have some sense of proprietorship. Secondary proprietorship, I guess you could say. Anything else?
With respect to the faith that they are following.
With respect to?
Administrators of the world are supposed to uphold principles of religion irrespective of the faith that people follow.
Irrespective of the faith that people follow, okay.
And what?
Yes.
And if the, those principles, if they implement, they establish those principles without Krishna, and maybe they implement it without Krishna.
What's the beginning, right? The message is that can lead to focus upon the personality of Godhead. Without that, how do you focus? How do you focus upon the personality of Godhead? Yes, an intermediate stage, exactly. You know, it's sufficient to say just surrender to Krishna. And for those that aren't ready to just surrender to Krishna, then at least in principle, recognizing that these are not just ethics and morality, they're God-given. We can go down a step and say, well, you know, just forget that they're God-given, just be truthful. But that's nowhere. What somebody thinks is truthful is another person thinks is a lie. Anyway. Where's the standard? Okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah.